Hi, welcome back to Agent Insider. I'm your host, Andy Jewell. Thanks for joining me today. So the last few episodes, we've been talking about talking with real estate agents, talking with mortgage brokers. And so I wanted to dive a little deeper into home insurance in general, since that's my area of expertise would be insurance. So I wanted to just kind of walk through the coverages like I would with one of my customers and just say, hey, here's what the different coverages mean, and these are why they're important. So I'm just going to kind of go through each one, and hopefully this is helpful for you guys. So coverage A on a homeowner's insurance policy, if you look at it, it'd be coverage A is dwelling. That's your first one. And this is what most people are going to look at. And this is how much coverage you have to rebuild your home in the event of a claim, a total loss scenario, burn down. So that's going to be however much that number is. Something that is important to pay attention to, because that's something that most people are looking at, is how much is coverage A. But there's some key ancillary parts of that coverage. And the first one is it replacement cost or actual cash value? The big difference here between replacement cost and actual cash value is replacement cost, as it infers, is going to be to rebuild the house with a new house. So we're replacing the house. Actual cash value says we're going to give you the depreciated value of the house. It is not intended to rebuild the house. It's intended to pay what the actual value of the house is as it is today. And that's not going to be market value. It's not an agreed value, because you could have agreed value as well. But most of them will be either replacement cost or actual cash value. That ACV, actual cash value, is going to be how old, what is the functional age of the building? So if that building is functionally 30 years old, what is the depreciation schedule on a house? And typically would be depreciated out, the functional age of a house is going to be somewhere around 50, 60 years or something along those lines. So the adjuster at the time is going to say, what's the functional age of the house? Not what the actual age is. You might notice that if you're looking at an appraisal, they'll put the actual age and then they'll put the functional age or effective age. And so that's what they're going to go off of. What's that actual, the functional or effective age of the house? And then they're going to depreciate it out on a schedule. And that schedule is going to be determined. It's a national schedule. It's not something that adjuster is going to make up at the time of the loss. So you're not going to get full value of the house. But if you were going to say, hey, some people can't get replacement costs because maybe the condition of the house is such that the insurance company would not offer replacement costs. Or some people might just say, you know what? I'm at a point in my life, if this house burned down, I would not want to rebuild it. I would just want, give me the money and I'm going to leave. I don't want to mess with it. So that might make sense for some people, but it's an important distinction to understand. Is it actual cash value or replacement costs? Second part, subset of the replacement costs on the dwelling amount. So let's say the dwelling amount, and I'm just going to use some made up numbers, obviously, because we're not talking about a specific house. The dwelling amount is $200,000. So that's the replacement cost on it. Then you'd have a sub coverage of extended replacement cost, or you could, you may not, it could just be straight replacement cost. Or it could have extended replacement costs. The most common in the industry is that you would have extended replacement costs at 25%, which means if the building burns down, you get an additional 25%, or in our example of $200,000 house, you're going to get $50,000 extra, kind of as your slush fund. So that's going to help you, like if the price of lumber jumped or the price of labor jumped midterm of your policy, that's going to kind of be built in that slush, so that way you have more to rebuild in the event of it costing more than what they projected it to cost to rebuild the house. You can go 20, I've seen them as low as 10%. I've seen them as high as 50% or 100%. So it will double the value. There's also an option, and these are usually on high-end homes or high-end carriers, insurance carriers will give the option of replacement cost guaranteed, which just means effectively that amount, that $200,000, becomes irrelevant, because they'll rebuild the house, whether that costs $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, there's no cap in the amount the insurance company will pay to rebuild the house, like kind and quality. So those sub things people don't pay attention to a lot can make a huge difference in the claim payout process if you have a total loss, a major fire. So it's something to be aware of. is how those how the replacement cost, actual cash value, extended replacement cost, or guaranteed replacement cost. The next coverage level that you'll see typically on a quote sheet or declarations page is going to be separate structures. Separate structures, or coverage B, typically would come automatically at 10% on your most of your standard carriers at 10% of your dwelling amount or coverage A. So if you have $200,000 and are offer the building coverage, you're going to have 10% of that, or you would have $20,000 in separate structures coverage. Separate structures coverage basically is covering anything not attached to the house. So it's going to cover like fences, sheds, detached garages. There's some nuance to that, though, I would add, that people don't always think about. So stormwater, like the stormwater drainage coming off of your roof, is considered separate structures. So a lot of times people don't think about the gutters, downspouts, and if you have to have like a stormwater drain, depending where what your city code is. But that separate structures coverage will cover things like that. Septic tanks could be covered under separate structures. So it can cover a wide range of things that aren't as obvious. And most standard carriers are going to give you some included coverage there because of that. There's certain things that fall under separate structures that you may not think about. Playground equipment, like if you have a tree house, things like that could be considered separate structures. You might want to increase that. So that's something else to be aware of, is if you have a large shop or if you have a big fence, like $20,000 seems like a lot, but if you have a large yard that's completely fenced in, that may not be enough to replace your fence if you had a major windstorm or if you have a big shop that you built. So make sure you're aware of some of these sublimits. The next one down is going to be coverage C, or personal property. Again, that's just going to be a percentage, and this will vary by carrier. There's not as much of a consistency in the percentage, but the way the insurance companies come up with that amount of coverage for your personal property is a percentage of the coverage A, the dwelling amount. And they kind of say, hey, this is what we think is on average a good percentage to have. It'll range between a 40% and a 75%. So that's a big range depending on the carriers, or even depending on the packages that are offered by the carrier. So it's something to think about. I often tell people that coverage amount sounds like a big number. So if you're, you know, if you're at a 50% coverage amount on that $200,000, that means you got $100,000 for contents. That $100,000 seems like a lot, but most people don't ever replace everything. You buy things slowly. And oftentimes, as you're starting out in life, you're given certain things, right? Somebody will give you like, hey, I got an old couch, I'm not using it anymore. You can take it and use it. And so you accumulate a lot of stuff and you never buy it all at once. And you don't typically buy everything that you have anyways, because some stuff is gifted to you. In the event of a total loss and a fire, now you have to go and replace everything, buying it new. And that adds up really quick. So it can seem like a daunting number, but in the reality, if you think about all your pots and pans, all your clothes, all your furniture, all of your finishes, like knickknacks, TVs, all of those things, socks, add up. And that's what that number is. Now, again, there's two ways you can cover your personal property. One is actual cash value, which they're going to give you the depreciated value. This would be an easier example. So if you have a couch and they say, hey, the average life expectancy of a couch is 10 years. That couch you've owned for 5 years, to replace the couch is, we'll say, $5,000. But because it's halfway through its life expectancy, they only give you $2,500. They're only giving you half of the value of the couch. On a replacement cost basis, they say, hey, to go buy that same couch today is actually $7,000. Now they'll pay the $7,000 for you to go buy the same type of couch that you had before, brand new. So it's a really important coverage to have at replacement costs. It does change your premiums. Obviously, when you have better coverage, it's going to be more expensive because the insurance company is going to pay out a lot more in the event of a claim, but it really makes a big difference in the claim. So personal property was coverage C. Coverage D is loss of use. Loss of use is going to be paying for you to stay someplace else while your house is repaired or rebuilt. You're typically going to have two parts of your loss of use. One part is going to be your coverage amount. So it'd be like, could be a dollar amount. So they may say $50,000 or $100,000. And then the second part, if you have a dollar amount, you typically also have a time frame, which would be 12 months, 24 months. Some of them will just do what's ALS, or actual loss sustained. And that will just be a specific time period, like 12 months or 24 months. I do recommend people to think of, if it's available, to do the 24-month period rather than the 12-month period. Typically, in my experience, the premium difference is very small. You might be looking at maybe a $10 a year difference in premium. But in the event of a claim, that makes a significant difference in how much pressure you have to get your living expenses paid for while your house is being rebuilt. So if you had a total loss, if you have smoke damage and you're out for a month or two while they're cleaning out the whole house, no problem either way. But if you have a total loss when it burns down, what I tell people often, think about, so I had this discussion with the contractor the other day. He's like, well, I can build a house in less than a year. I said, you can when you've already been planning to build the house, right? So like if you've already got your permits lined up, you have the plans approved, you have your labor, your subcontractors hired. So then you go in and you just start building. The actual build process would be less than a year. The issue with a burn down is, one, it wasn't planned, or it shouldn't be planned, or you have other issues. So you don't have your plans put together. You don't have them approved by the city. You don't have permits. You don't have your contractors lined up and ready to go on day one when you break ground. So you don't have everything pre-set up before you start that construction phase. So pre-construction phase, you would need to include into that time of, or loss of use time. The second issue is, before you can even start that pre-construction phase, is you're going to have the investigation phase, because the fire department's going to do their investigation, and the insurance company typically will also do their investigation to make sure it wasn't arson. Once that's done, then you get permits for demolishing or removing your debris. You have to get all of that removed, then go in for permits and planning to start your building process. Before you even get everything removed, it could take several months, 2 to 3 months, just to get your debris removed from the property. And now you're on a 9-month time frame where you have to get your permits, plans, and everything lined up. So that's the issue that oftentimes comes up. And it's difficult to get a house from the date of the fire to move back in 12 months. I won't say it's impossible, but it's very difficult. And so I always tell people, if you can, you should opt for a longer period of time for your loss of use coverage. Long-winded explanation there. Coverage E is personal liability. Personal liability is going to cover slip, trip, falls, dog bites, things like that. Things that you could be sued for. Now, here's something that's interesting. There's a couple of options inside of your liability on a homeowner's policy. You could have just a straight premise liability, which means it's just going to cover if something happens on your premise. It's not actually giving you personal liability. And that's fine if all you're worried about is someone slips on your property, there's a dog bite or something along those lines. But when you have a personal liability that is part of your homeowner's policy, that gives you liability worldwide for you. So if you're on vacation and somebody trips on your luggage, or you cause something to happen, not a car accident, because that's separate and there'd be another discussion, but you cause something to happen where your dog bites somebody off premise and they're turning around and suing you, then it's covered. So I recommend making sure that, if possible, again, that you have personal liability, not just premise liability. And with that personal liability, there's an option that most carriers should offer, good carriers will offer, is personal injury included with that personal liability. Personal injury covers the things like libel and slander. In our modern age of Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, or X now, it is important to have that personal injury, because if you post something online that becomes offensive to somebody and they decide to press that issue and they want to sue you because of how, what you posted or how you posted it, especially even if you have kids that are posting things online, it can open you up to a lawsuit that may not be covered anywhere if you don't have personal injury included with your homeowner's policy. So it's something I personally carry on my own policy, and I recommend to all of my customers to carry that coverage, because it could become a huge lightning rod, depending what happens in your community, what's happening online. And it's a great defense. And again, it's not very expensive. Typically, I think it runs around $20 a year. Mind you, all these things can add up. So you got to be careful and make sure that you're buying the coverage for the things that you care about, the things that you want to protect yourself against, and just being smart with what you're spending your money on. The next coverage is F, medical payments to others. So this is something that a lot of my customers get confused on. And they go, so you give me $500,000 or $1 million of liability, but then you give me $1,000 or $2,000 in medical payments to others. That seems like that's not intuitive. The medical payments to others is a no-fault claim. So if you're being sued, that goes into your liability. So that should be that $500 or $1 million of coverage. But the medical payments to others is really just somebody got hurt on your property. They're not suing you. You're not liable. You just feel bad that they got hurt at your place. You can open up the claim. The medical payments will pay out on it. Typically, what we'll see happen is the only times I use this that part of the policy is if somebody is like, I'm not sure if this is going to turn into something more or not. It's like, okay, well, let's open the claim. The adjusters will pay them out. They say, hey, we don't really feel like Mr. Smith was responsible for this, but we'll offer you $1,000 or $2,000. And then you have to sign off saying that you'll never sue Mr. Smith in order to get that money. And so that kind of just closes that case. So it's not hanging out there as something that can happen later. It's not something I recommend using very often because it does still count against you as a claim on your claims history for your homeowner's policy. So it's not something I was like, hey, just open it up to cover someone's medical deductible if they got hurt at your property, even if you're not at fault. It's something you should use judiciously, but it is there and there is times and places to use that coverage. The next one I was talking about is building ordinance and law coverage. So this is typically included at a 10% coverage amount, which means that is 10% of coverage A, your dwelling. So in our scenario, again, of the 200,000, that gives you $20,000 of building ordinance and law coverage. That building ordinance and law coverage is really meant to cover increased cost to construction due to building code changes. So the replacement cost says, hey, we're replacing the house as it is today. But there's been this new building code that came in and says that you have to have ArcVault breakers for every room in your house. Originally, you did not. And those ArcVault breakers cost an extra $2,000. So that extra cost of upgrading to the ArcVault breakers, because it's being required by code, would be covered under that building ordinance and law coverage. Or possibly you don't have the storm drain a tight line from your gutters into the storm drain, and now your local building code requires that you do that. The extra cost of that would be included in that building ordinance and law coverage. So it does come into play on almost every major fire that I've seen. We always end up dipping into that part because building codes are always changing. If the home is very old, I would recommend, if it hasn't been completely updated, I would recommend to increase that building ordinance and law coverage, because 10% may not even be enough for all of the building code changes that you have to comply with. So you might want to have that at a 25 or even a 50% coverage amount, because it can be a lot of code changes that you have to implement and can get very expensive. The other thing where that can come into play at times is if you have a partial loss, and they say, well, in order to get the permits to fix this partial loss, if more than 50% of the building is damaged, the local building codes can require you to bring the entire structure up to code. And so that ordinance and law coverage would cover that extra cost to bring the structure up to code. Now, if you were just getting a permit to remodel your kitchen, there was no claim, and they say, hey, yeah, well, you can do that, but you have to bring everything up to code, that's not going to be covered on your insurance because there was no trigger for coverage. But if there was a claim that we're covering already and now they're making you bring everything up to code, that would be covered under your insurance under that building ordinance and law coverage. I did want to just backtrack, and as I'm thinking about this with upgrades and whatnot, on the replacement cost on a home policy. That is meant to replace the house as it is. If you want to upgrade things, you're free to do that. And oftentimes people will do that if there's a major loss. They'll go, well, I think I wanted to have granite countertops anyways, or I think I wanted to have all tile floor instead of some carpeting. You can totally make those changes, but upgrades are not covered on your policy. So typically you would just have to be budget for, like, I have to pay those upgrades out of pocket. So if I wanted to add a bonus room over the garage while I'm rebuilding the house, that's totally fine to do. But because that wasn't there originally, that's not covered on the insurance. And I'm going to have to pay that extra $50,000 to the contractor to have that bonus room put in. There's a lot of other ancillary coverages that could come up on your policy. And there's also going to be sublimits for things like theft of jewelry, theft of firearms, fine arts, motor vehicles. Like, there's a lot of extra sublimits that are going to come up on a policy. And that's something that you should really talk with the agent about, to say, hey, what are my sublimits on the policy that I should be aware of, and make sure that they match your coverage needs and your lifestyle? Because not everybody cares about, yeah, there's a sublimit on theft of jewelry, but maybe I don't have a lot of jewelry, so I'm okay with that. But I have a lot of art, so I need to make sure that my art is covered. Those are things that you would want to talk to your agent about, on specific needs that you would have, because there might be sublimits that you're not aware of. The other thing I want to make sure people are aware of is, this comes up a lot, and I don't know where myth comes from, but a lot of times people think, like, well, if my car is parked in my garage, that would be covered under my home insurance. Unfortunately, no. If your car is parked in the garage, it's not covered on your home insurance. You would have to have a car policy or an auto policy on it. Same thing with boats. There's some limited coverages on some policies for boats that are under a certain length or that don't have motors. So they're saying, hey, yeah, we'll cover your kayak, but we're not looking to cover the Bayliner, right? So there's going to be some very specific language on the homeowner's policy about boats. And that would be something you'd want to ask, if that's something you are concerned about or that you have. But for a general rule, anything with a motor is not going to be covered on the home policy. There's some exceptions. Things like tractors or ride-on lawnmowers are going to still be covered if they're used for the maintenance of the property. But in general, it's not. So it's something you should make sure, if you have stuff that you're storing in your garage or in your shop, ask that question to your agent. Hey, what about this? Is this going to be covered, or do I need a separate policy? And then you can make the decision. Is it worth buying a separate policy for the boat that I've never used, and because it's broken down and it's my project? Maybe it's not worth worrying about. Or maybe it is. Maybe it's like, hey, this is a wooden boat and it's got a lot of value and I want to make sure it's covered. So ask those questions on some of those sublimits. The last coverage line that I wanted to talk about is the deductible. So here's something that I think was interesting. The standard deductible, since I've been in insurance for the last 19 years, which makes me sound older the longer I've been in it. Obviously, you get older the longer you've been in something. But the standard deductible has been $1,000. And I was looking at that to go, hey, back in 2005, if I used an inflation calculator and I had a $1,000 deductible in 2005, what's that equivalent to today? And it was about $1,800. So I think people in general have lower deductibles when they carry that $1,000 deductible than what used to be standard, even because of inflation. So I always tell people, think about it this way. When you're trying to decide how much of a deductible you should have, your bank may have specifics of the maximum amount of a deductible you're allowed to have. Outside of that, I would go to the maximum that you're comfortable to pay, because you don't want to turn in small claims on your homeowner's insurance. It will affect your rates, and it could affect your eligibility for certain programs, to where you're getting pushed into a high risk category because they go, hey, you've had two or three claims. You actually can't get insurance from a standard carrier. You have to go to a non-standard carrier, which has lower coverages and higher premiums. So in general, the idea of insurance is a transference of risk, right? Transferring risk from myself to the insurance company. And I should transfer risk that I'm unwilling to or unable to make, to take on myself. So the deductible, again, is how much risk am I willing to take and how much risk do I want the insurance company to take? You should take as much risk as you're comfortable taking and as much risk as you're able to take, and then transfer the rest to the insurance company. So if you're able to afford a $5,000 deductible, I would say carry a $5,000 deductible and then only turn claims in for the stuff you can't afford. The idea of insurance is that you're still going to have something bad that's happened. If your house burns down, regardless of what your deductible is, you're still got a bad day, right? This is going to make a bad year. It sucks because your house burned down, you lost your belongings. And that can't be, no matter how good a job I do as your insurance company or your insurance agent, I can't undo that. You're still going through a miserable time. What we do want to do is we want to make sure that that bad incident is a moment in time and doesn't define your life, right? So we don't want you to be bankrupt. We don't want to ruin you financially. We want to make sure that it still sucks, but it doesn't ruin you. And that's kind of the idea that I think about when it comes to deductibles. You want something that you can afford, but that's not going to ruin you financially. So, and that's going to be different for everybody because people are in different places. Somebody might be okay with carrying $5,000 deductible. Some people might be okay with carrying a $10,000 deductible. And other people are like, no, I only have $2,500 in reserve. That's all I could afford to pay out of pocket if something happens. And then I'm going to have to turn it into insurance. That's okay. Just be aware, like it affects your premiums when you have claims. The higher the deductible, the lower the premium you have now. So it saves you money if you can afford to carry a higher deductible. And then you're not going to turn in that. You shouldn't turn in claims, small claims anyway. So if someone could afford $5,000 and they only have a $1,000 deductible and they have a $3,000 claim and they call me up, I'm still going to tell them, if you can afford to pay this, I would not open the claim. It's up to you as the customer, but me personally, I wouldn't open the claim if I had $3,000 in the bank that I could take care of it myself. So carry the deductible that's as high as you're comfortable with, and then recognize insurance is there to protect you from being ruined financially. It's not there to just say, oh, you didn't have a bad day. You did have a bad day, regardless of how good your insurance is. It still sucks. Your house still burned down. And there's no way around that. So we just don't want to ruin you financially. The purpose of insurance is so you don't get ruined financially in that moment. So hopefully that's helpful to help people understand to think about those deductibles. The higher the deductible, the better your rates are. And the less claims you have, the better your rates are and the better your coverages are for that big thing. And that's ultimately what I tell people, like if the wind rips your gutters off, that's really not what insurance should be for, right? Like that's a bad day that sucks. If your house burns down, that's what insurance is for, is to rebuild your house. So obviously there's lots in between the gutters coming off and the house burning down. But in general, I hope you guys understand what I'm saying. That's kind of, I would say, a long-winded explanation on home insurance. Hopefully that's helpful to you guys. If you have questions, feel free to send me an email at theagentinsider@gmail.com. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, drop it, and you can drop it in the comments or shoot me some feedback. Give us a like if you're watching it on YouTube. And I'll be happy to answer any other questions. If you have other questions that are related to insurance, put those in the email to me as well, and be happy to put that in queue for another session for us, or another episode. Well, thanks so much, guys. I hope you have a great day. Until next time.